everyone to episode 34 of the Business of Sport. My name is Ahmed El Houli, and as always, every week, my co-host, Mr. Rob Yell, joins me on the show. Rob, how are you, buddy? How's things?
Good, my friend. How you doing? I'm in 4K tonight, so new camera looking good, and I'm beating the heat out here in Arizona.
Very, very impressive, and I'm beating the cold here in down under Melbourne, -1 degrees this morning. Wow. Celsius. So, big show. Lots of talk about. Lots has happened in the last week since our last show. We'll start right at the top. One of the biggest clubs in the world, Barcelona, seems to be dissecting itself and selling itself off. I mean, soon there'll be nothing left. Barcelona plot a $1 billion Barca Media SPAC, and they sold Barca Vision, a stake of Barca Vision, for 120 million euros. So for those of you that don't know what a SPAC is, it's a special purpose acquisition company. So here's the spiel. Barcelona are planning to float their Barca Media business arm, which is their content creation arm, on the NASDAQ stock exchange through a $1 billion SPAC. It's quite the move, actually. They've entered into an agreement with Mountain & Co., an acquisition, Mountain & Co. Acquisition Corp., which also controls its digital media assets, including video content and social media and esports. So they're pretty much throwing a kitchen sink at this, but they're selling everything off. What's going on, Rob? What is happening, mate?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously, you know, if you follow historically what kind of where Barcelona has been, that, you know, they got themselves in financial hot water, and, you know, but had a bounce back year with Xavi taking over, winning La Liga. And so they've obviously got some success, and with that success comes some expectations to repeat. And obviously they would like to get back the top of Champions League. And so that's going to require probably some acquisitions and player acquisitions. And financially, they have not been in a position. They, you know, they've been fortunate to, you know, get some quality play from some players, you know, within the budget, if you will. They were not able to make the play for Lionel Messi because financially it was going to cost them, you know, more than what they had. And, you know, this is just another step of one. There's debts that needed to get repaid. There's been obviously previous loans that are out there, but you know, look, financially, they've got, you know, these assets, and you know, this is not the first time that I've seen media rights advanced. At the end of the day, you know, if Barca can return to their winning ways and start, you know, filling Spotify Camp Nou, you know, on a regular basis and start collecting more trophies, value of that franchise continues to go up, and these deals look, you know, one, great for the, you know, the SPAC investors on that side, but more importantly, I think, you know, we want to see this franchise, you know, historic franchise, get back on solid ground, get back in a place where, you know, sound financial decisions could be made and they're not having to, you know, sell the farm. But, you know, look, you know, times are what they are. And look, they've got the assets now. And more importantly, there's someone out there that was willing to, you know, put up, you know, $1.12 billion in cash is king, you know, to, you know, make this deal happen.
So the interesting point here for me is that they've gone to the American market, the NASDAQ. They're after American money, obviously.
With the World Cup coming, it's where the money shift, the financial shift of the game is going to end up in U.S. soil. It's coming, and this is just getting ahead of it.
Exactly. So that's the interesting part to me. Are we seeing a shift in the way this game is being financed, played? Because I would have thought they would have gone with a European exchange. There's multiple in Europe. They could have gone in You know, I mean, in the UK, England, one of the biggest financial hubs in the world. You know, all the soccer's there, the Premier League, the biggest league in the world is there. Why wouldn't they go there? Why the fact that they've gone to the NASDAQ speaks volumes to me personally, because that means that for them and for the rest of the world, the future of football is where? Is in the United States. Right where you are.
Yeah, it's coming here. And look, we're we'll talk about this, you know, a little bit in the next segment. But you know, Lionel Messi, his arrival here, what you see on the soccer calendar with Copa America, next summer, World Cup following that, and the Olympics right behind that. The media dollars are going to be flush in the U.S. market. The football, global football marketplace is gonna be focused on this market for the next 4 years. And right now, the MLS is making an absolute massive push, despite what the Saudi League is doing, about moving itself into potentially a top six, top five position, as a global league. You know, with the addition of Messi, but now, we've got Jordi Alba, we've got, Busquets, there's a discussion, Suarez is on the list, Ramos is on the list, other potential players, Griezmann and a few others whose names are rumored to find their way to a potential MLS franchise. We expect some rule changes, following this season to kind of open up, for some international players. And I honestly think we might see a real strong influx of South American talent into the marketplace, starting next season as well. Because, if you're a South American player, option to go to, Italy, Saudi Arabia, Champions League, Premier League, et cetera. The MLS is now a real viable option. So, again, we may see some, we're seeing that shift, and to your point, financial markets are recognizing, that money is going to be here for a while, certainly in the soccer and football marketplace.
Absolutely. And people say Saudi money. I totally get it. But a lot of the Middle Eastern money is flowing back into the United States anyway. So if you look at Todd Bowley and what he's doing at Chelsea, who's invested in his fund, right? The Saudis, right, and other Middle Eastern sovereign wealth funds. So that money's coming back in anyway. So no matter what we say or do, yes, they do have money. They are building up their league. Well done. Great work. But the hub of money, the money hub of the world is the US. And now it's been pushed and directed into soccer. One thing that I found interesting, Rob, is that I was talking to someone and they said to me, is FIFA the highest grossing league in the world or sporting organization in the NFL is? FIFA only does about $6 billion. The NFL does about $12 billion. They were gobsmacked, right? So this is... Yeah. This is what people don't understand. The way that the sponsorship media rights landscape works in the US is very different to the rest of the world. And there's plenty of money there to make up for a lot of lost ground elsewhere. Because if that's not a definitive example, like nothing else is.
Absolutely. It's going to be an exciting 4 years for, the growth of the sport here in the U.S. And if the last, 8 weeks of Lionel Messi dominating the landscape is any indication as to how quickly the attention span of the American sports consumer can shift to a league that was, fifth or sixth option in its own country. Look out when the world shows up, certainly the Copa America clubs show up with obviously some of the top South American clubs, and then the world gets here. you know, the appetite will be massive for sure.
Absolutely. Moving on, our next segment is absolutely about Messi and his domination in the MLS. He hasn't slowed down from the first second he's jumped on the field. He's scoring game after game after game. Whether they have four goals scored against them or two goals scored against them, he's finding a way to bring them back and win the game. This is a team that in the standard league, the MLS actual season, is last on the ladder, right? This is a team now in the League Cup where they're beating all these teams who are on top of them and are progressing in a manner which is absolutely bamboozling people because they're winning. They're winning through a very ultra-offensive formation because they have to, because their defense can't hold up. So they're outscoring teams. So this guy, his domination continues. And just recently, Apple's announced a six-part documentary series on Apple TV+, which we've spoken about earlier. We predicted this to actually come.
Yeah, we predicted, obviously, I think a couple earlier this week, Apple, announced, they believe that now it's 2 million subscribers to the to the MLS package.
Season pass. Yeah.
So I mean, they've blown through their numbers. They have, their ratings and their impressions are off the charts into the billions. And here we are with Lionel Messi. Leading Inter Miami they scored 21 goals in the 22 games before he arrived. They have scored 21 goals in the six games he's played, and he scored every time. And again, it's not just Messi; it's obviously some of the other. You know, Alba scored tonight, and Sergio has been fantastic in the defensive midfield. I mean, they have made some very strategic additions, but this team, the way this team is playing, they play from behind. One game and came back and won that, and here they are, beating Philadelphia, who's one of the top teams in the table in the East. Inter Miami is at the bottom of that Eastern table, and it was a mismatch. Outshot 16-4, final score 4-1. I mean, it's every chance Miami got. It was on point, on frame, and beat the three-time goalkeeper of the year in MLS, Blake. So it's not like they just scored four goals against a chump. This was on the road against a top team with a top goaltender, top coaching staff. I mean, and they knew what was coming, and it was 3-0 at halftime to a team that hadn't given up three goals in a game in over 2 years. So, wow. What we are seeing, right now, just with the impact that Messi is having is incredible. But look, we're a society that's gotten into drive to survive. We now got the quarterback series. We like Hard Knocks, and you're damn right we want to watch the Messi documentary because we're seeing what's happening on the field, what's happening behind the scenes. What was that arrival like? What is the day in the life? I mean, we did get a glimpse of, hey, he could go shop at Publix and no one knew who the hell he was. That didn't last long because obviously we saw the next time after the first game, he tries to go shop at the Adidas store and the entire city is waiting out front for him to come outside. So he enjoyed his anonymity in South Florida for just a moment. But, look, we're an inquisitive society and we want to know. And we want to see behind the scenes. And so very wise for Apple, who's obviously got the rights, got the relationship. They're trying to drive their content outside of, sports and their other products. This is must-see TV and strike while the iron's hot. And I, for one, will watch. I know you will. And I'm sure that 2 million plus MLS package subscribers are going to tune in, whether Inter Miami is their squad or not, because at the end of the day, they're football fans, and we're watching the greatest player on the planet, still in his prime, do his thing with you know, with a club that was dead in the water before he arrived. So it's it'll be fun to watch.
Has this deal with Apple shown or put on show to the rest of the world that it can be done through streaming? It can be, you know what I mean? Are we jumping the gun here?
It's a unique set of circumstances. Let's be honest. You're talking about, you know, the player. I mean, it's a perfect storm at the end of the day. You've got him coming off a World Cup championship. You know, he's coming to a sexy market in Miami that already has kind of the cachet with Beckham. You get the opportunity to kind of roll him out in a tournament format. You know, he's not coming in and saying, okay, we got 15 games to see if we can get out of the cellar and get into the playoffs. He gets a warm up. They haven't even restarted, you know, their league play yet. And, you know, if they were re-ranking the tables at this point, I'm sure Inter Miami would be placed out of 15th and probably somewhere in the top four. But the fact of the matter is they're starting in last place and they're going to have to earn their way up the table. And if there is any indication right now, you know, they're a team on fire and they're not done adding personnel yet. But, you know, I think that this is going to be, you know, a pretty incredible run. It'll be fun to watch it play out. And, I, for one, am a compelled consumer that is going to watch this. I'm somewhat pot committed a little bit with our client on the front of the Inter Miami jersey. So, it's work for me to watch the game. I got to watch our client in action. So,
100%.
Yeah. Awesome. Fillable time, as they say.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the one thing people will say to you is, how do we sustain this hype? How do we keep people on Apple TV? I think that's like this retention is going to be a bit of an issue after Messi's departure, but you know, it's still very, 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 very early actually.
That's 2026, and I anticipate there will be multiple global stars playing in this league by the time Lionel Messi has decided to hang up his cleats from the MLS and take his ownership position in Inter Miami. I think he will change the global image of this league to the point to where Inter Miami won't be the only one loaded up with caliber talent.
There you go. All right. You heard it from the man himself. We'll keep going we'll stay in football. A huge deal has happened in the last 48 hours. Neymar Jr. has signed a 2-year deal with Saudi Arabian Pro League club Al Hilal. This is getting ridiculous. Listen to this deal. $175 million a year, no taxes. Private plane, staffed mansion, $85,000 extra for every win, $545,000 for every social media post that he pushes promoting the Saudi league or their tourism. What are your thoughts, buddy? Where are we going with all this?
We've had the conversation about, you know, the Saudi influence with their money in the sports space, whether it be soccer, whether it be golf, whether it be tennis, whether it be boxing, whether it be cricket. I mean, they are looking to influence and find other ways to invest their money in global sport. And for the betterment of not only their country, but, you know, some may call it sports washing, but at the end of the day, I think what it is that they're just genuinely wanting to, make sport better around the world. And they have their home domestic league, Ronaldo being the first move. You got Benzema now, you've got, Kanye is on his way over there. They unsuccessfully wooed, you know, Messi and Mbappe. Now, you know, the next target was Neymar, and, you know, Neymar's personality and his, shouldn't be surprising to anyone that he's the kind of the next big name to go there, because, you know, he's not, kind of protecting a legacy, if you will. He's a very talented player, but, you know, the welcome was over in PSG. He wasn't going to go back to Brazil. That would have been, you know, I think there's, you know, I think he makes that, you know, stop after maybe an MLS stop and before he ends up back for one last run at Santos. This is you know, not the last move that you'll see in the Saudi league. We've seen some of the immediate impact with some TV deals with DAZN and Fox, you know, here from a domestic standpoint. You know, the Saudis are competitive. They want their league to be right up there with everybody else. And how do you do that? It's by signing people that people like us are going to go, oh, yeah, I might check that game out. Now, it's obviously made that league much more interesting. It's made it to where it's now available on broadcast here in the United States. It's not just a Ronaldo league anymore. So, I mean, you know, there's more coming. And look, at the end of the day, competitive leagues all around the world make this game better. And this is certainly, you know, no different. And I think you or I having that deal put in front of us probably wouldn't take us very 100%. Long to sign it either.
100%. So
given our collective skill sets in the sport, yeah. I don't know that we'd ever see it. But if it did come in front of me, I might take it.
So what he's come out and said actually since then is that, well, the word is he wants to play there for 2 years, then go back to Barcelona just before the World Cup and prepare for the World Cup. And since Ronaldo went there last year, he made a promise that he's going to attract a lot of players and a lot of money to the league. 20 players out of Europe have been signed up in the Saudi Pro League since then. The four big teams have been privatized, and they've been invested into by the sovereign wealth fund, which means their projects. That's what this means. Those four big teams are going to be projects. Those 20 players have gone into those four big teams. They're looking now. The next step is to sort of win the Asian Champions League. And I guarantee you they'll have some sort of run into somehow getting involved into UEFA. It would not surprise me if there's some sort of competition that comes up, because, hey, UEFA is not hard to convince. Let me tell you that part. Right? We will see some sort of restructure, I promise you, in regards to the Champions League, some sort of restructure that will somehow encompass that these Middle Eastern leagues, pick out a team, one or two teams that will probably end up playing somehow in the Champions League somehow. It's only a matter of time. And we can say we said it here first. Yeah. So,
well, you know, it would not be surprising to see a PIF backed brand be one of the next global sponsors in UEFA. Those don't go cheaply. They go, you know, at about 40 to 60 million a clip. And so, you know, that's peanuts for the PIF and the brands that they back, you know, I agree with you that's the trend. That's the goal. They got to get themselves into position to obviously raise the level of their play. And again, you know,
that's 5 hours worth of work, Rob.
Yeah. There you go. I thought, you know, we build the top of the table around here.
5 hours worth of work of petrol coming out.
There you go.
Literally. That's it. They do 11 million barrels a day. How much is a barrel going at?
Well, it's about 100. What about 90?
Let's say upper 90s. Let's say 90. We'll get out. It's about 5 hours worth of work.
Yeah.
Nothing to them.
We got that.
Nothing to them. So we will see that. And them launching a new airline, Riyadh Airlines, they're going to plaster that everywhere. And they love the soccer and the football. And I guarantee you, before you know it, it'll be there.
Yeah. Atletico Madrid is not their last deal.
Absolutely not. So they'll look to have one in each of the major markets, guaranteed. So, look, for consumers, that's a good thing because you might get better priced tickets, flight tickets. The more competition, the better. Let's just hope the experience is just as good. But enough about the Saudi Pro League. Every week we seem to be talking about them.
Yeah.
Every single week. All right, we'll stay in Europe. Anthony Joshua made a comeback, sold out the O2 Arena for Robert Hellenius. Hellenius has previously been knocked out by Deontay Wilder in the first round. Hellenius fought a week before the fight on a local club show, and they still had him come up and fight Wilder. Had him come up and fight
AJ.
AJ, now what concerns me here is AJ's body language, his demeanor coming into the fight. If you saw when they squared up, he was very chatty, and he was almost like trying to assert his authority on Robert and saying to him, "What? Why are you looking at me like that for? Why this? Why that?" Like, he's looking to pick a fight, almost like he's demanding that respect. I've never really seen him do that before, and I've watched all his fights, and I followed him closely. Ever since his loss to Andy Ruiz in Madison Square Garden, the American homecoming, or the American launch,
yeah,
he's never been the same.
Yeah, well,
never been the same.
Yeah, a couple things is that one, you know, this fight, you know. As a fan of the sport, that matchup when the deal fell apart with who was supposed to fight
Dylan White,
right? Dylan, yeah. So Dylan White has his issue.
Dylan,
it falls apart. There's no way that this fight gets sanctioned in the United States. There's no way that Hellenius could fight a week before and then step into the ring with a fighter of Joshua's caliber, right? Two, don't tell me that there weren't better options for them. I know personally one of our clients is Michael Hunter. Michael was sparring with him in Las Vegas. Michael Hunter would have been a better matchup for that fight, but again, Joshua doesn't want to fight his sparring partner because obviously he was training with him and knows all of his secrets. There are other Usyk is not available at the time. Certainly Tyson Fury is not interested in this fight right now. The heavyweight, division, they're, Bacoli and Martin and there's a few others, Herkovich, there's a few guys out there that, at the end of the day, if I'm the commissioner of this league, give me a better fight than that. And that's no deference to Robert Hellenius for being gutsy enough to step in the ring. I guess, I'll take that paycheck too. But I think more of the fighter safety issue that was totally ignored in the interest of a payday, obviously a sold out arena. Joshua was very popular over there. But, at the end of the day, get him a better fight than that, better competition. To your point, he hasn't been the same fighter. And look, getting knocked out, getting beat when you're not supposed to get beat. Yes, he turned around and beat Ruiz in the Saudi desert, in the rematch. Give Andy Ruiz the shot again. Maybe just solidify your legacy and end break
it's
the
too
time.
Dangerous. It's too dangerous.
Well, to your point, too dangerous, but.
Never going to happen.
This is why we love Dana White. I know, and the UFC finds its way into our show every damn week, but this is why we love Dana White. Dana White would have had the next guy up ready to go. And he doesn't care that you want to be undefeated or that you're, this is a tough fight. This is the business and this is what sells tickets. And this is how we, you know, this is how we roll. I would say I would have loved to have seen Michael Hunter get that shot, but I knew that wasn't going to happen given that he was a sparring partner. But Michael Hunter was the number one ranked, you know, contender December a year ago. And Huey Fury canceled out on him twice, cost him his ranking, and now these guys won't duck him because they know he's too good. But they also say, well, it doesn't do me any good because he's not ranked anymore. Well, promise me, Michael Hunter is fighting tonight in the team boxing league, and he will be ranked as soon as he gets anybody to step in the ring with him, because he will knock them out and he will be back on the track. And so that's my Michael Hunter plug for the night. But boxing is in peril. The heavyweight division is in a little bit of disarray, and I want to see Joshua get back. I mean, we need him. We need Wilder. We need Fury needs someone to
motivate,
put him on his ass, yeah, and beat him. And not because I don't like him. I just like competition because I want to see Tyson Fury. I love Tyson Fury when he's motivated. He is he's a fantastic fighter. And look, he beat Joshua. He beat Joshua. He's beaten Wilder. Unquestionable. But at some point, I want to see him. I want to see someone knock him out. I want to see him get beat. And I want to see him then come back, because that's what sport is, competition. And I don't want to see someone, you know, go 50-0 and dodge all the great fighters in their prime and then fight them when they're past their prime and go, oh, see, I fought everybody. So no, you didn't. You didn't fight like Hagler, Hearns, Duran, and Sugar Ray Leonard did in the 80s. That was just a round robin. It was like, which guy was up next? And that's what made the sport great. And we need more of that. And I think this fight just kind of gave us a little bit of a letdown. And to your point, Anthony Joshua was trying to psych himself up for this fight. Yeah, you know, when is the last time you saw Mike Tyson have to psych himself up for a fight? He got psyched up for tomato cans. He came out serious. You know, he was ready to go.
They had to calm him down.
Yeah, they had to calm him down. So
yeah, they had to calm him down.
Hopefully we'll see. I want to see the sport grow, and we're seeing some of those fights happen at the lower weight classes. You know, maybe at the end of the day, I would have rather seen Jake Paul in the ring with Joshua than.
It was a very bad mismatch, and yeah, one that also astonished me is that Derek Chisora is still fighting. He fought Gerald Washington on the semi-main event. And as the semi-main event, and honestly, he struggled. I get it. There's a lot of money. He sells a lot of tickets in London, especially at the O2. He's known that he can draw a crowd. But there's got to be a time when we say enough's enough. Go do something. Please stop using unwarranted.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, again, I'll reiterate that, you know, safety and quality of the competition is something that is one of those things that, you know, boxing in general has an integrity issue on. And, moving forward, I would love to see, you know, a little bit more unification, a little bit more, consideration on the fighters. And as the consumer, I want to see a good fight. I mean, I don't think Joshua needed a tune up from a guy that played, you know, that fought, you know, a week before. It's a physical demanding sport, and, it's a dangerous sport. And, I don't want to see any fighter put his life on the line for a paycheck. As promoters and managers and certainly stewards of the sport, I think that was some gross negligence. And at the end of the day, thankful that Helenius got out of it. But I mean, he took some nasty hits in that seventh round, and
it was gone.
You know, Yeah, and then he was gone. I mean, at the end of the day, he's like, okay, finished. I feel I've worked enough tonight. I'm out.
A fight that magnitude, what do you think it would generate in terms of advertising and sponsorship? That's something that's of interest.
Well, I think a lot of that was already pre-sold, you know, based on the fact that it was going to be Dillon White. And when Dillon White, you know, failed his, you know, drug test or whatever the reason was.
The saga was, yeah.
You know, tickets were sold and sponsorship and media deals. And, you know, the last thing that was really there was probably pay-per-view. And canceling the fight was not an option. You know,
yeah.
So it was just a matter of finding a warm body, and I go back to there was a lot of other available fighters that if not at his stature, more importantly, were fresher, maybe give him a better test for five rounds at least, you know, as opposed to. Helena's putting himself on the line for seven rounds and potentially getting injured. That's just one of those things for me that I wish sometimes you got to protect, you know, warriors from themselves. So
absolutely. All right. We'll keep going. We wish him all the best, and we look forward to what he said is going to be his next fight against Deontay Wilder, because he's going to need all the luck that we wish him. Mm-hmm. Sky Sport, this is really interesting, actually. Sky Sports Germany has done something that we haven't really seen before. They've completed a multi-screen vertical broadcast of a live soccer game on TikTok, and they've combined the live feed of the seasoning opening German Football League Super Cup with various other interactive and graphical and social elements. So here we're seeing a vertical feed on TikTok through, you know, this is one of the biggest leagues in the world. And then we're seeing all these stats and analytics and so on pop up, you know. Is this something that we should look out for? Is this something that's going to be once off?
Well, I mean, look, if this is successful and it's, look, technology is advancing, you know, across, you know, sports, entertainment, etc. You know, we're seeing, you know, streaming on the rise. We're seeing, intelligent activation elements around the game. You know, interactive components. You know, live synced up live feeds with avatar. You know, all kinds of stuff. You know, in this new era. So you know, this is just another indicator of one. You know, test it out, see what kind of reaction, see what kind of response. And if it, you know, look, it's a monkey see, monkey do world. If this is successful, then one, you'll see it, you know, Sky Sport doing more of this. And then you'll probably start seeing, you know, you'll see some of the, you know, the zones of the world and maybe Apple TV or, you know, Amazon Prime, you know, ones that, you know, have the need for being creative and finding other ways to bring you know, viewers to their channels, to their platforms. You know, this is something that you know, could be a precursor to that. So
if you put your commercial hat on there for a second, what would you define as a success in this instance?
You know, something like this. You know, you get a couple hundred thousand, you know, 300,000, 400,000, you know, active users on the platform. You've got something there. I mean, obviously, that's something that you know, those are people, you know, consciously making a decision, you know, moving to that platform to upload it, to engage, you know. If it's something that, you know, moves the needle, you know, it's obviously a stickier platform because of the interactive nature of it. You know, you may see more of it. And if you've got advertisers that are on that platform and see, you know, more click-throughs or web hits, or at the end of the day, you know, transactional, sales of some sort. And it's at a higher, click and a higher premium than some of the other, media platforms. You might see some dollars shifting over to that, to that platform, and looking for more of it. And, as you know, where the money goes, so goes the technology, and, smart business people will make it available.
Very, very interesting. All right. Well, that's definitely an interesting transition into the world of fan engagement and how they're now doing things. Because TikTok's a very big platform. It's got a lot of younger audiences engaged. So we'll see how that one pans out, what their results are, and we'll see who else joins that party. But from us, that's all, really. Thank you all very much for tuning in. Thank you, Rob. Always an absolute pleasure. Before we finish, do you have any parting words for us?
Just another week of the sports business, filling up our chalkboard of things to discuss. But over here, we're in NFL preseason, so the other football, the oblong spheroid, is picking up with preseason football. So we're starting to get see college and the pro game coming our way. I'm sure we'll have some topics to discuss here in the near future around that. My sports business class kicks off this week, so I'm looking forward to meeting the next 25 students that I get to corrupt over the next semester. So looking forward to that, and hopefully some of them will start tuning into our podcast, and they might learn a thing or two, because we do discuss what happens in this industry, much like we do on this podcast, what happens in real time. Then just a little shout out for the Bellarmine Knights. My son's a senior on that soccer club. They have their third preseason game this Friday against on the road with the Musketeers of Xavier. And then they have their season opener on the 18th against the Northern Kentucky Norsemen. So, again, just a little plug promo since we're talking about the beautiful game. Got my son kicking off his season here next week. So I may try to sneak it into the podcast. So beware.
Go Knights. All right, everyone. Thank you very much. Take care. We'll catch you all next week.
All right. Take care.